The Black Lizard Big Book of Black Mask Stories. Edited by Otto Penzler. Black Mask 1. Doors in the Dark and Other Crime Fiction from the Legendary Magazine.
Introduction. Keith Allen Deutsch. This panoramic collection of stories and novels from Black Mask Magazine, 1920 to 1951, is the most comprehensive presentation of the hard-boiled tradition of writing ever published from this great magazine. I believe this is a significant publishing event because Black Mask introduced the hard-boiled detective and a new style of narration to American literature. In many ways, Black Mask took the 19th-century American Western tale of outlaws and vigilante justice from its home on the range in dime novels and transplanted that mythic tale to the crooked streets of America's emerging 20th-century cities. It introduced a new landscape for both American adventures of justice and also a new kind of narration told with the vernacular language of the streets and featuring new urban villains and urban, if not always urbane, heroes for the mystery story. The first hard-boiled detectives were men of the city all. Carol John Daly's Three Gun Terry and Race Williams appeared primarily on the wild streets of New York, talking wise and walking that eternal tough guy detective line between the law and the outlaw. The first great detective narrator of the new hard-boiled fiction, Dashiell Hammett's professional lawman, The Continental Op, the first op tale is included in this collection, operated famously in San Francisco, as did Hammett's iconic detective, Sam Spade. Surprisingly, soon after the publication of The Maltese Falcon, Gertrude Stein declared Hammett, not Hemingway, the originator of the modern American declarative narrative sentence.
Come and Get It by Earl Stanley Gardner. Read for you by Oliver Wyman.
Ed Jenkins was warned by a crook he had once befriended to be on his guard against a girl with a mole, that she would lead him into deadly peril. This crook was shot the instant he left Ed's apartment. Seemingly by accident, Ed soon meets the girl with the mole. She takes him to the mysterious head of a newly organized crime trust. Ed is given a job to do, threatened with death if he refuses, and is offered as a reward certain blackmailing papers that have been held over the head of Helen Chadwick, the one girl in his whole career for whom he seriously cares. Ed is double-crossed. He strikes back. A murder is framed against him, and an ambush set wherein he is to be shot with all the evidence of guilt upon him. He narrowly escapes, and now the duel to the death is on between the phantom crook and the icy-eyed leader of the crime ring. This series of three completed episodes is the most thrilling work the popular Mr. Gardner has yet produced. I gazed into the black muzzle of the .44 Squint Dugan was holding to my face, and secretly gave him credit for being much more clever than I had anticipated. I had hardly expected to be discovered in my hiding place, least of all by Squint Dugan. I watched the slight trembling of his hands and listened to the yammering of his threats. Dugan is of the type that does not kill in cold blood, but has to bolster his nerves with dope, arouse his rage by a recital of his wrongs. Gradually, bit by bit, he was working up his nerve to tighten his trigger finger.
Doors in the Dark. A story of Captain Steve McBride. Everyone said it was suicide, but Captain McBride smelled murder and went on the trail alone. The sounds of motor traffic on Marshall Drive rose in a muted, not unpleasant medley to the topmost floor of Tudor Towers. Eastward, the glow of Midtown hung like a will-o'-the-wisp in the crisp winter sky. A breeze plucked fitfully at the northeast turret apartment. McBride, admitted by the oldish maid, brought with him into the warm apartment a breath of the cold outdoors and a vital sense of his own personality. He shook his head when the maid reached for his hat. His windy blue glance flicked her frightened gargoyle's face, darted away, and leaped nimbly about the foyer as he trailed her short, rapid footsteps towards the living room entry. He saw Halo Rand standing at the far side of the room. The room was dimly, discreetly lighted. A parchment-shaded floor lamp stood back of the woman and built an amber halo about her amber hair.
"I'm so glad you came, Captain."
The Aubusson muffled the blunt fall of his heels as he went towards her extended hand. His spare-boned head dipped. In his eyes was a candid, straightforward look. "Got here as quick as I could, Mrs. Rand." The maid vanished with a breathless look flung over her shoulder. Though Halo Rand's tall, slender body was relaxed, one knee slightly bent, there was an air of repressed excitement in her face. McBride, holding her hand for a brief instant, felt tension transmitted to his own. He was aware of a vague, well-bred perfume. "What's the matter, Mrs. Rand?" She said,
"Come."
She led the way across the dropped living room, up three steps to a mezzanine, opened a door and motioned the skipper into a large room furnished with leathers and hardwoods. A man's room.
"Dan's room," she said. "His den. Sit down, Captain."
He was strangely moved, puzzled, but he sat down. Halo Rand chose to stand, resting the fingertips of one hand on a mahogany desk. The other hand toyed with a string of pearls suspended from her neck.
"I may be foolish," she said, "but I'm afraid. I can't help it. I'm afraid for Dan."
Luck by Lester Dent. Read for you by Jeff Gerner. Lester Dent, 1904 to 1959, was born in La Plata, Missouri, but grew up on a ranch in Wyoming. While working as a Western Union telegraph operator, he learned that a co-worker had sold a story to a pulp magazine for the princely sum of $450. As a reader of the pulps, he decided to try it himself and sold an action story, Pirate Key, to Top Notch for the September 1929 issue. Soon after, he moved to New York for a full-time writing job with Dell Publishing. Then he had the chance to launch a new series for Street and Smith. After staggering success with The Shadow, SNS hoped to duplicate it with a detective who used various gadgets to fight crime, and Dent created Doc Savage under the house name Kenneth Robeson. The first issue hit the stands in March 1933. The series lasted until 1949 with 181 issues, of which 159 were written by Dent. After Doc Savage, the character for which Dent received the most acclaim was Oscar Sale, the loner boatman who appeared in only two Black Mask stories, Sale and Angelfish, which have been relentlessly anthologized as outstanding examples of the hard-boiled pulp detective. He began a third story, Key, but when his editor, Joseph Shaw, left the magazine, he abandoned it. Dent wrote the earliest draft of Sale in the spring of 1936 on his schooner Albatross, while anchored at Miami's City Yacht Basin, where Sale is set. He once told Frank Gruber, a prolific pulp writer himself, as well as a historian of the genre, that he had been forced to rewrite both stories so many times that he did not like the final product. The story in this collection, Luck, is an early draft of that first adventure about Oscar Sale. As there were numerous drafts, it cannot be said with authority that this is the first version, but it is safe to say that it is a very early one, and certainly one that Dent preferred to the published story. Thanks to the novelist and noted pulp scholar Will Murray, the agent for the Lester Dent Estate, for the history of this important publication. Sale was published in the October 1936 issue of Black Mask. Luck has never before appeared in print.
Luck. The fish trembled its tail as the knife cut off its head. Then Red ran out of it and made a mess on the planks and spread enough to cover the wet red marks where two human hands had tried to hold to the dock edge. Sale put the palm of his own hand in the mess. The small policeman came from shore. He had shoved through the small green gate with the discreet sign, Private Yachts, No Admittance, at the shore end of the swanky pier, and was under the neat green canopy, tramping in the rear edge of the glare from his flashlight. His leather and brass glistened in the light. He was cautious enough to walk in the middle of the narrow, long pier, but did enough stamping with his feet to show he was the law. When he reached sail, he stopped. His cap had a cock. His lower lip was loose on the left side, as if depressed by a pipe stem that wasn't there. He was young, bony, and brown. He asked, "That you give that yell?" Sail picked up the hook and wet line. He held the hook close to his left palm. He grimaced at the small oozing rip in the brown callus of the palm. It was about the kind of hole the fishhook would have made.